Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode.
Welcome to Good Morning Hospitality, your one-stop shop for the latest news, noteworthy trends, and thought-provoking discussions across the industry. From hotels and short-term rentals to all things travel and hospitality, you'll find each episode equips you with the information that you need to start your week. Join us on Good Morning Hospitality every Monday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning.
Good morning. Happy Monday.
Last day of the week.
We'll never get it down, but it's okay. That's what makes it fun. And we bring will. That early morning energy.
We have all our coffee mug merch. This is, need Ember to sponsor us.
Yeah.
Will, when's the new gear coming in?
So I had to make some revisions on the design because for some reason they kept putting the whole back of like our quarter zip and our hoodies was just the HFM logo. And I was like, please stop doing that. I don't want that. And they're like, well, you sent this logo. And I was like, that was for another design. I want Good Morning Hospitality and Good Morning Startups to be completely separate. And they're like, oh, okay. So they haven't sent the revisions yet. But once that's done and I approve it, we'll go into production, baby. Let's go.
Premiering at VRMA, maybe? TBD.
Yeah. We're holding off on announcing the conference schedule for the show for a lot of reasons, you know, which some of these actually we might bring up inside this episode. There's a lot to pack or unpack today. But before we dive in, how was your guys' weekends? All is well in Miami, Alabama, and Denver.
Yeah, I got a lot of work done, and then I also went on an 8-mile walk and got fried. Even with sunscreen on, it's been very cold here in Miami, and this is the first time, well, quote, cold, my skin had seen sun in the
72?
Wild. Yeah, it was in the 60s, okay? But it was great to, like, be outside and be active, so.
8-mile walk. That's no joke.
Yeah.
Are your calves?
Up and down the beach?
Up and over the Key Biscayne Bridge. From where I live. Yeah.
Right.
Lovely. Lovely. How about you, yeah. Michael? Anything exciting?
Same old over here. We've been out of town the past few weekends, but this weekend back in the usual. So coffee shop with the little boy and getting the house in order.
You guys still doing Saturday donuts?
Every Saturday we're in town.
Sounds so good.
Wholesome. I love it. So good. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, a good weekend here in Denver. Shout out to my friends David and Hunter for turning another year older. So we were celebrating them this weekend out in Steamboat Springs and got to see some of the purple people movers from AKA, Moving Mountains. So shout out Robin Craig as well. We did not stay in one of their homes, unfortunately, balling on a budget, but stayed at a Vicasa home or a condo, and it was kind of interesting. I didn't book the property, so I told my friends that they're never allowed to book any short-term rentals ever again unless Why? Going through me, because I want to make sure they're getting the good quality product. And we had a great stay, actually. It was not bad, but definitely the unit could have used a little love. Sure.
I have similar rules with people that I go on vacations with that I either need to find or have the final pass through on the homes that we book.
That's so funny. I have the exact opposite rule. I want nothing to do with it. I don't want anybody to ask me to ask for favors. Sometimes it still inevitably happens, as you know, Brandy, in some recent trips to Miami. But I do try and generally stay out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that I was wanting to ask for favors. It's just to want to make sure the quality product is good. And like, there's a lot of questions at checkout, right? Because no one sent checkout instructions and there wasn't anything on the listing and there was nothing there. So it's like, you know, all the little things. But our, you know, shout out to them for our coffee maker broke basically the first morning. We drove up Friday, 5 a.m., got there at 8 a.m. Everyone else stayed the night, you know, the night before, because some of us have to work during the week. And, you know, the coffee machine broke and we put in a ticket. The guy came in and gave us a brand new pot of coffee that was like unopened and amazing. So, you know, shout out to them for good service.
Last time we went on a family trip, my parents booked a Vrbo property, booked a property through Vrbo, and the fridge wasn't working right. So they're like, Michael, don't you have friends at Vrbo? Can't you just call somebody to get this fixed? Like, it's not really how it works. So
Tim Rizzolio coming in.
So, yeah. Well, let me text my buddy, Tim. Hey, Tim, the fridge isn't working here. Yeah, that'd be a
man.
But yeah, that's why I try to just stay out of it. Anyway,
well,
this week was an interesting week, and some of it bled into the week prior. But on the urban side, a comparison between Sonder, Bob W., and the massive growth of Miami supply, and how they're all interrelated in various aspects. So without winding you up first, let's come to Miami second. Big congrats to Bob W., raising, I believe it was 40 million.
43 US.
$43 million, 40 million euros. The dollar to euro is not strong anymore. No. In our favor. But huge congrats. I mean, there hasn't been an urban operator pulling in a massive funding round since you guys did it, Brandy.
And ours was not 40 million.
It wasn't 40. So. It was still, what, 6? And you did it 2 years ago, so... Two, 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. So,
well, and this was their Series B. So, 43 million Series B is not bad for an urban operator. I know we've seen some other raises in the past. Unfortunately, some companies that did raise those significant amounts are no longer here and operating anymore. But I think it's good, healthy sign. And I know we're talking kind of pre-going live and, you know, wanting to understand the business model. We did get to have Nico back on in October. Brandy wasn't able to join. She was on a panel during VRMA. It was one of those crazy, crazy trips. But Michael and I got to talk with Nico and very, very brand driven, which is great. I think it's hard to see operating companies, especially not like Romy's. Romy's a different example, but there's a lot of urban operators that you know, they have a brand, but not really strong. It's not always out there. And Bob W., I think, really pushes in the brand market. So it's nice to see a little reward there for probably driving some good loyalty with their guests and their buildings.
Well, I think the big thing that jumps out is their fiscal responsibility. And you could kind of hear that in the interview with Nico a while back. But also to be able to raise in an environment where Sonder, we'll get to them in a second, is just bleeding left and right and having basically the same business model. I think they do rev share, not master lease, so slightly different business model. But it is a stark difference between the two companies. So any more comments on Bob W. before we move to Sonder?
No, I just think it's nice to see companies still getting this kind of funding. The investors aren't totally spooked by what's been happening. And like you said, there's a kind of more of a focus on fiscal responsibility and the bottom line as opposed to growth at all costs, which was the US model for a while. And so I think that is points to the potential for success. You know, you never know how it will shake out in the end, but I think that they are definitely on more of a solid footing than maybe some of the US companies were.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely agree. And just want to say congrats, Nico, anybody from the team, if you're watching or listening,
good job. On that, the fundraising piece, I've had a handful of conversations with companies that are deep into their fundraising rounds and or looking to use money to acquire kind of blood in the water. They can sense opportunity is abound. And it feels starkly different than this time last year when SVB was melting down and the world was, you know, on fire. I don't know if we're economically completely out of the woods yet, but sentiment is definitely better than it's been in a while.
I will say, sorry to jump in. I will say from, we recently did a CEO roundtable. I had Demi Horvat from AirDNA. We had Matt Loney from Explori, Steve Davis from Operto. And one of Steve's comments was around moving fast. And I think a lot of these companies in the acquisition space or even funding, they're all looking at like, okay, what's already out there in the market? Because our tech pool is huge, right? There's so many vendors in this sector of hospitality, bleeding into hotel side as well. So like moving fast and seeing, okay, can we build this in 9 to 10 months? Or is it just easier to acquire it and start integrating and putting the product into a currently existing ecosystem? And I think that's a big piece that a lot of founders and CEOs right now are looking at is like, how do I move faster without bleeding and moving fast just to go out of business and like, or having to raise a bridge round or whatever that might be. So methodically, strategically moving at a faster pace in order to shorten that window, I think in competition is going to be really important. And it's probably something even operators are looking at. I haven't done a CEO roundtable for the operators yet, but I definitely think that's going to be in the works because I want to hear how some of the biggest CEOs are looking at that stuff.
Yeah, I definitely think the vendor side, it seems like there's a bit more of a flurry of activity on the M&A side. The operator side, I mean, I think it's still been this kind of like holding on for dear life situation and still adjusting. And, you know, if you haven't done all of your cost cuts, like continuing to do those, trying to see where you can adjust your revenue strategies, I think it is. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. And also, there's different parts of the country experiencing different, you know, economic situations. So some operators might be on like the M&A train chomping at the bit. Yeah. So I think that it'd be a good idea for your roundtable to get like a mix of different types of companies to see where people are at.
Just like the one that you were on, Brandy, we're not going to give everyone the same market, the same brand and same business model. Right. So from moving mountains to Jackson Hole, Wyoming to Miami, we're definitely going to get that variety.
Well, you mentioned two things in your discussion right there real quick. Cost cutting. Sonder has been doing some cost cutting. They cut, was it 17%?
17%, 106 employees.
17% is a pretty chunky bit of your staff. But this is their third round of layoffs. So not looking good. I mean, it hasn't been looking good over there in a while, to be quite frank. But I'm still hopeful that they can pull it together and figure it out. You know, anytime anybody in the industry goes under, it's not good for anyone in the space. Yeah. So if you're rooting for your competitor's demise, that is a data point when you go to sell or go to get investment that is going to be a red flag. For those,
how are you different from Sonder? And that's a question you have to answer.
How are you different from Vacasa? How are you different from any of these companies that Lyric or Domio or Front Desk? How are you different? There's too many bad examples right now in the market. And that's probably why there's not a whole lot of activity on the vendor side. There are definitely people still rolling up traditional vacation rental markets. Mm-hmm. But the vendor side makes more sense because they're mostly venture funded and have a product that can be rolled in pretty seamlessly without a new market or a new team. So I expect that to continue on. And then Brandy, any thoughts on Sonder before we move to your favorite?
My favorite topic. No, you know, I think we're like, I totally agree that you shouldn't be, you know, cheering for someone's demise. I think this is just like a slow moving car crash. Like it hasn't fully wrecked yet. And it's just like, it's just watching it slowly happen. I would be interested, like, are they going to, you know, focus on their hotel strategy, like really kind of narrow down to some like other parts of the business. I also wonder if they'll try to take the company private again. We had seen there's an article about Soho House being like pushed to go private again. And yeah. I think they're kind of similar.
And WeWork.
And we, yeah. And so
I'm trying to buy WeWork back.
Well, I think that that's like these companies that like IPO'd with like, well, in Saunders case and Soho House via SPAC, they didn't have the financial stability to be a public company. And now there's this push to take them private again. So maybe that's Saunders saving grace. I don't know like the mechanics of it, but I think that that's an opportunity that's on the table as well.
For sure. And I love that you brought that up because, Brandon, before we got on, we were talking about like the SPAC babies, right? Like all these companies that went public via SPAC, it was kind of the COVID escape, right? Where it's like, okay, well, we can't go public initially, so let's just go through a SPAC and make that our kind of end all be all. And it's really interesting because like I wanted to bring up a quote. I was listening to another podcast this morning out of the industry, and this quote of Jeff Bezos going, "Your margin is my opportunity." And the part about this in Saunders case is that they don't really have much margin, right? Like they're bleeding capital. And the question to pose to you guys is, you know, does an operating company like Saunders, even though they do have like a majority of their buildings under their own kind of like either ownership or some crazy lease agreement where it's like what WeWork did, where it was like pay 10 times the lease per square foot and just secure the building to grow. You know, should an operating company even go public? Because at the end of the day, the margins are so small. And so if the margins are so small, is it even worth it? Because Saunders did okay in the beginning, but how long did that last? A week, a couple of days until their stock price just compiled down to like nothing, basically. So I don't know. That's where I want to go, because there's going to be some tech companies that will try to go public in our industry from the hotel side and the short-term rental side. So maybe a tech company makes sense, but does an operating company make sense? And also quick shout out to Jeremy Weiss, as always, tuning in. And whether it's the hotel crew or the SDR crew, he's always here. So shout out to you, Jeremy.
So one last comment. The lease arbitrage world and model. Arbitrage is fantastic for a period of time, but all arbitrage windows close.
Yep.
And if you get caught holding the bag, you lose. And Saunders went the hardest, the heaviest, and the most long-term, and they're paying the price. So if you're a lease arb person out there considering the industry, wanting to take out master leases, I know it's probably tempting to do a multi-year long-term thing, but as we look at supply growth in Miami, there are external factors that can heavily change your calculus. Even if you feel confident about the rate that you locked in, supply might dip, demand might dip, anything can happen.
Yeah, seasonality when you have rental arbitrage is also a real pain, because the highs are high and the lows are very scary. So
The lows aren't low. They're very scary.
The lows are
That's a new merch quote from Brandy. We're going to have Brandy rants. The highs are high and the lows are very scary. That's so good.
Yeah, but that's, you know, the rental arbitrage model is, you know, I guess in some cases, Saunders actually won. If you look against that like cohort of like the Domios, Lyrics, Stay Alfreds, all through that, like they've survived the longest. But yeah, it's you are kind of like left holding the bag at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, and they also did some in the last like 20 to 11 weeks, they did some C-level hiring from chief commercial officer to chief accounting officer. So I think the goal of getting financially fit, you know, their stock price this morning was a little over $4. So it's better than the $1 that they have to meet minimum to be on NASDAQ, right? Like
they've already done one reverse split.
Yeah, I was going to say the reverse split, layoffs, a couple new hires, probably a combination of everything, right? So it's hopefully going in the right direction. Again, like going to the sentiment of not wishing for anyone's demise in this industry. I don't wish Saunders to go out of business or to go private. I would love a great company to point out in the public, you know, publicly traded options. But yeah, it's never It's never easily predicted. Let's just say that. So before we move on, look at that beautiful mug that Brandy has. If you're listening, you won't be able to see it, but maybe you'll get one if you sign up for Sojo's amazing amenities. And as I mentioned in our LinkedIn post or even in the show notes today, Sojo's the gift that keeps on giving. So right now they're focusing on their gift program. So if you have owners in your rental program, or even if you want to treat your guests to a special treat outside of the normal amenities, sign up for Sojo's gifts and get the gift program roped into your amazing rental program, or just through owner retention. It's the gift that keeps on giving is Sojo. So get the 30-day free sample package through our link in the show notes. And of course, like always, tell Sojo we love him, because we do. Thank you, Sojo.
All right, Brandy. So tell us what's going on in Miami. We've had some guests. Jamie has come on and told us a little bit about the supply-demand imbalance. What's actually going on? And how big
Brandy
is this
rent,
supply imbalance?
Brandy rent. Brandy
how
rent.
How much do you
Brandy,
hate it?
Brandy rent. Brandy rent.
Throw in an Airbnb comment too while you're at it.
Well, it's part of the what I'm going to say, but it's not necessarily a rant. Yeah, so we've talked about this a lot, like Miami, South Florida, but like particularly the Miami area has a huge oversupply problem for short-term rentals. You have a very unique situation in the country where there are a lot of condo hotels or a lot of condos that allow for short-term rentals, and now some apartment buildings that allow for that. So you just have a really large pool to pull from that isn't necessarily found in other cities. So that's been, you know, everybody was buying condos in Miami during COVID. There's this, you know, surge in revenue. People are seeing dollar signs and they're buying these condos at really high prices, you know, similar to other parts of the country, based off of kind of like future revenue that they could earn. But we've seen in the last year and change, it's been pretty rough. Like rates have been depressed pretty significantly, in some cases like 17, 20%. You know, Jamie has the data on a month by month basis. And it's interesting, our trend lines aren't quite like they follow the AirDNA ones, but obviously there's some variation. But there was a Skift article that came out, and there's been some other publications about the 8,000 plus units that are going to come online. And it's interesting, like that's just in like the downtown Miami urban core. That's just, and so that is like an astonishing number of units. And so there are a lot of kind of like the press here about it is, you know, affordable housing, all this stuff. I mean, none of these buildings are affordable, even if they're long-term. Like they're all luxury apartment buildings or luxury condos. So dealing with like workforce housing is not these buildings. But if you're talking about like, you know, having, you know, ghost buildings, basically where people are buying these condos to not live in or whatever, like, that is part of the conversation. But there's two parts to this. Like we've talked about before, Airbnb had secured a bunch of deals with apartment buildings and I think some condos to have the units automatically be part of their like rental program so that residents could rent out their space. So that's one side of it. And then you have the condos that are being marketed, you know, this is like fully furnished, your like turnkey Airbnb, basically. So obviously very appealing. A lot of these buildings are selling out. But on the flip side, there are some other kind of like economic things at play. So you have significantly increased tax rates and insurance rates. A lot of insurers have left the state, hurricanes being pretty much the main reason for that. So insurance costs are incredibly high and the tax, property taxes are going up. On the other hand, you had the Surfside collapse a couple of years ago. And since then, all HOAs are requiring, want to say the amount, the reserve amount is 20% of their fees, but don't hold me to that. It's a percentage, right, of their base to hold for structural repairs. And so that is driving HOA costs up as well. And then you have that we were talking about, like the, you know, the arbitrage, the danger with that is when the long-term rental rates are really good. So you're seeing that happen as well. The money that you can make from STR is decreasing, and long-term rental rates, although they're kind of like stabilizing right now, are still pretty high. So you have that trade-off, like, do I take a little bit less money, but I have like one stable tenant all year, maybe for many years. And more people, you know, we're hearing that people are taking their units out of rental programs and converting them to long-term. So that's with existing condo supply. And then, so you have this kind of like, you know, giant number that'll be entering. And, you know, I obviously not all 8,000 of those units are going to be used for short term, but it is catchy to talk about. And I think where this isn't just like a Miami problem, but where it extends to other parts of the country, it's where there has been a lot of like catch up construction happening in the last couple of years, where people want to use that supply maybe for short term rentals, and you're seeing ADRs depressed a little bit. And so maybe these other communities will face this similar issue where you just have this massive supply and not really sure what's going to happen with it.
Damn.
That's, yeah, I think the factor that I didn't take into account was Airbnb's multifamily program, and that probably does accommodate for a large number of the units now, but a small number of available nights. I mean, we've seen the numbers are pretty nuts. I can't recall exactly, but it was like 400,000 units equated to like $7 million in bookings. So yeah, very big imbalance between what's actually transacting versus what is available.
Exactly. So
hopefully it's not as bad. And I do think you're spot on the long-term versus short-term imbalance. I mean, that's what happened during COVID. A lot of people just switched to long-term renting and were able to survive, to get through. So it's still not a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not as bad as it might look.
I think that it's also with these things, like we're speculating kind of on how the chips are going to fall. But let's say a lot of people start to realize that they're not getting the rental revenue that they wanted from their rental. Like, that's not going to happen overnight. People, these condos still have to get delivered, or the apartments have to get delivered. People, like, there has to be kind of like a settling period for all of this. And then for people to actually be part of a rental program or do their own rentals for a little while and then realize, so this will happen. Like, I think in 2 years or maybe a year and a half, that's once things get delivered, come online, and then things start to settle a bit, we'll see kind of how drastic the supply is affecting this area.
Yeah. And say the other counterpoint is like during COVID, a lot of people also went from long-term to short-term, adding to the complication of, like, I think maybe more imbalance in the kind of conversion of unit usage. But I think for operators like Romy, right? Like, you guys have a strong foothold in Miami and New Orleans. And I think for operators that have been in pre this kind of shift in supply, have the opportunity to play the long game, right? Because at the end of the day, it's going to, like, operators are going to get out. There's no way they're going to be able to see, like, oh, like, the margins are already small. We've already talked about this. And so if they're seeing this and like this huge amount of supply and they're realizing, oh my gosh, like, to compete with Romy and the Centrals and all the others that are coming into the city, it's probably not worth it. They should go find another market. And then people that stay and have the long-term play are going to have a growth in unit count, which is going to be overall probably better for you. So I think it's kind of like the long-term versus short-term.
Hold on.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like the last couple of years have been like, just buckle up and hold on.
So in Airbnb's Q4 earnings, there was a number that really jumped out to me, and I pulled it up so I wouldn't misquote it here. What percentage of gross nights booked do y'all think were longer than 28 nights?
Oh, I remember seeing this. I feel like it's something
less. I would say south of 30.
It's 19%, which to me is an insanely large amount. People aren't traveling on Airbnb. They're literally living on Airbnb. Like, anything that's longer than a month long stay is, you can chalk that up as you lived in that city. Yeah. So that's very surprising to me. And it kind of goes to your point, Will, of like, COVID certainly changed the way people live. And Miami's a very transient town. People pop in, you know, try and drop their new crypto coin, wrap a Rolls Royce in like hand thrown paint, and then bounce out to the next crypto capital.
God, I wish that wasn't as accurate as it is.
But yeah, I mean, I think that those numbers are fascinating. And I think Airbnb does want to play more in that long-term space. And that's as evident as possibly could be with that stat.
Yeah, I think another really good example of this, though, like a counter city, is Phoenix, where that was like a really hotbed market. People are making a lot of money. A lot of supply comes online. And then all their, like, you know, the rental revenues drop. And there's a lot of occupancy. So I think that that's, you know, kind of the different coasts we can compare. But I'll let you know. You'll see my blood pressure go either up or down in the next year.
Are you wearing a Whoop or an Oura ring? We need to track your stress levels. All right.
I might get a Whoop. We'll see. Maybe they'll sponsor us. Whoop,
whoop. I just got mine. So
the COO at Oura Ring was early days home away. So
really?
All right.
Interesting.
Tom Hale. Interesting. What's up, Tom?
Fun fact of the week, Michael Golden. Love it. This is fun.
He was on Noiseware's board. So
that's fun. Yeah. Wait, whose board?
Rest, but I'll never call it that. It's Noiseware.
Yeah, Michael really struggles with rebrands a lot. He still calls Romy Sexton.
No. I worked far too hard. We all did. It's Romy.
He'll be on the phone with me and he'll say Sexton. I'm like, Romy. He was like, yeah, whatever. I'm never going to change. I'm like, dude, it's rough.
I'm that grumpy old man now. I'm never going to change. Get off my lawn.
Awesome. Well, great episode, you two. We covered a lot of stories. So for all of our live viewers, check the show notes. Check all the things that we're talking about. We have a lot of sources from Skift to FocusWire to ShortTermRentals.com. You can find these stories in a deeper written view. And of course, thank you to our sponsors. Sojo, you're amazing. We love you. Marsha, Max, Joy, all of you there are awesome to work with. And then of course, if you are a new startup in the industry and trying to break ground, accelerate your growth, Good Morning Startups is the advisory group for you. So check us out. It's hospitality, startups, and where media intersect. So shout out to us, because what up? Good Morning Startups. I can't believe we got the domain. That was awesome. Anyways, check out the show notes. Hotel Crew is doing our 200th episode this Wednesday. This episode was episode 199. So we're at 200 on Wednesday. It's going to be pretty crazy. So check them out on Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, like always, we'll see you guys all again next week.